This is Chris Bleck on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. Thanks for listening to the Bleck and Abdallah podcast. It's sponsored by Coors Light.
It's Bleck and Abdallah. Follow us on the gram at Bleck and Abdallah and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Welcome in to Bleck and Abdallah on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. You can watch us tonight on Twitch. Search for the channel ESPN 1000 Chicago. If you want to talk football with us, you can call us at 312-332-3776. Let me start you with this, Adam, because the big news yesterday that Cam Newton heading to the New England Patriots, he will be the quarterback of that team. And obviously, Jared Stidham is there. They're not as high on Stidham as you would think if they're going after Cam Newton. So they have two quarterbacks to work with heading into this season. We will know whether or not this works out for Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots pretty early on. The Patriots' bye week is week six. In their first 5 weeks of the NFL season, they face two teams in those 5 weeks that are really good. The Seattle Seahawks, they're on the road for that contest. And they traveled to Kansas City October 4th. So that's week two and week four. The three other games are against teams who are kind of up in the air. Miami, do we really know what they'll be this season? No, they're questionable. Las Vegas, do we know what the Raiders are going to be this year?
Who knows?
Questionable.
Could be anything.
And the Denver Broncos, which I think some people are expecting to take a step forward. But if we know Bill Belichick and we know the way the Patriots usually run, they're going to win all three of those games. And they may steal one of the games against the Seahawks or the Chiefs. So I think we'll know early on if this Cam Newton experiment with the New England Patriots will work. We'll figure out if he's healthy. And we'll find out whether or not this Patriots team is going to be a playoff team once again. I like the move of Cam Newton heading to New England.
Look, I said it when he was still on the street. I said, watch Bill Belichick turn Cam Newton into a Super Bowl champion. Because if anybody it makes calculated moves and waits for the market to set itself or takes advantage of someone who needs it. I mean, look at all the, quote, reclamation projects or players that have been on the street that Belichick has turned. Like, they took a chance on Tim Tebow. Obviously, he didn't make the team. But didn't they sign Chad Johnson, Chad Ochocinco for a little bit? Didn't make the team. But ultimately, like, you look at these guys that Bill Belichick, he made a game plan for Jacoby Brissett, won games with Jimmy Garoppolo when he had to. He knows what to do. So if Cam Newton is healthy, if Cam Newton can play to, I'm not saying he has to be 100% of what he was when he won an MVP. I'm not saying he has to be 100% of what he was when they went to the Super Bowl. I'm just saying he's got to be healthy. Just a healthy Cam Newton. Is a healthy Cam Newton give you a better chance to win than Jared Stidham? If the answer is yes, this is a great move. If the answer is no, you cut him and you cut your losses. It's not that big of a deal.
Let me ask you this question. We've seen the New England Patriots over the last couple of years, you know, offensively, they have had limitations with Tom Brady as their quarterback. And we saw Brady be able to make some of those throws in the playoff loss that we saw in this year's playoff round. But it sounded like they were scoring a ton of points. Like, the Patriots, they lose to the Titans. And the Titans really, in all facets of the game, outplay them. But it's not like that offense was leading the way. So let me ask you this. If Cam Newton is healthy, How healthy does Cam Newton have to be to play up to the level of Tom Brady of last season? Like, I get Brady is the best quarterback we've ever seen in the National Football League, but I don't know if that caliber of a quarterback, what we saw from Brady last season with the Patriots, is out of touch here. And I feel like a healthy Cam Newton could certainly give you what you had from Tom Brady last season, as we're starting to see Brady's skills decline each year he continues to play on. Like, and that's the mistake I think people are going to make with the New England Patriots, is they're going to say, well, it's Tom Brady from like 5-6 years ago. It's the Tom Brady that's won Super Bowls. Guys, what we saw from Brady in the playoff game, it wasn't some stellar performance. Yeah, he was still throwing some outs, some sideline outs, But outside of that, they weren't really moving the football down the field. So how good does Cam Newton really have to be to get that offense back up to par where they're used to allow the Patriots to be successful? I don't know if it's that far off.
They were ninth in the league in rushing attempts. Now, they weren't that successful. They only got, 1,700 total yards. They averaged about 106 yards per game last year. But they were up there in attempts. They were protecting Tom Brady. Do they do that with Cam Newton now that they've got a better running back core? They've got, tight ends that are better developed. They've got that offensive line has always been very good. So I feel like, you've got ways to make Cam Newton successful. You've got an opportunity for Cam to be successful. He's just got to stay healthy. He's got to be healthy. So if he is healthy, he's probably about the same as an aging Tom Brady. Is he as good as Tom Brady is with the weapons that they have in Tampa Bay? Probably not. But Tom Brady still on this Patriots team, they might be about the same because if he's healthy. Because Tom Brady didn't have much to work with, just like Cam's not going to have that much to work with. He's not throwing the ball that hard down the field like he used to, just like Cam may not be after his injuries. Cam's got to learn how to play a way that's not going to put himself in harm's way as well. So he's got to learn how to not take those hits. He's got to learn to throw the ball away and not try to make something out of nothing because he's going to get himself hurt again. He's got to change that.
2019, Tom Brady, last season, 24 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, quarterback rating of 88. His completion percentage was 60.8. Cam Newton, if we go back to 2018 when he played 14 games, 24 touchdowns, 13 interceptions, quarterback rating of 94.2. His completion percentage was 67.9. I mean, listen, I kind of feel as if Cam Newton will be perfect for Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick in this offense. They'll find a way to use his strengths to move the football down the field. And back to my original premise of this Patriots offense not being that great, last year in the NFL, they were 23rd in yards per play.
Mm-hmm.
So again, this might be an upgrade at the quarterback position, even though they are letting go of the greatest quarterback to ever play the game. And I feel like that's why the Patriots were not desperate into keeping Tom Brady. They knew there were options out there that could at least get them to a comparable level of quarterback play to what they've been getting from Tom Brady. See what I'm saying? For the Buccaneers, it's a massive upgrade, right? Huge upgrade. For the Patriots, Belichick looks at the situation because, here's if anyone ever wanted to figure out what's the magic of the Patriot way, the magic of the Patriot way is outside of Tom Brady, they've treated every position as if you have to earn the position on the football field.
They always have. Absolutely.
They always have. And then in the last couple of years, that has started to go sideways with the quarterback. So when you saw the quarterback in the franchise heading into this offseason, and it started to head towards the way where the Patriots really didn't make a move. Remember all those stories that came out? The Patriots were not saying anything. The Patriots didn't meet with Tom. The Patriots didn't reach out. What is Tom going to do? Oh, there's a story about Tom doing this. Mm-hmm. And then something else leaked from Tom doing that. It was Brady trying to get them to respond. And the Patriots just stayed. They didn't do anything. You know why? Because Belichick knew there was going to be something out there for him.
I think also you need everything you need to know about what the Patriots think of Jarrett Stidham, you can look at by who they drafted to fill the quarterback position in the draft this year. They didn't draft anybody. Is what I'm going for. They're confident with Jarrett Stidham. They think that Belichick likes guys that run his system. That's why when Brady got hurt, they didn't run out and try to get anybody. They had Jacoby Brissett. They had Jimmy Garoppolo. So I feel like they are comfortable with Jarrett Stidham. They finally got a deal that Cam would agree to. That's basically the league minimum if they cut him, and he has a chance to earn up to $7 million. And if he is good, let's say he is good. Let's say he's great. Let's say he's amazing. Let's say they win the Super Bowl. Cam Newton sets the world ablaze again with how great he is. He wins an MVP, comeback player of the year, offensive player of the year, all that good stuff. Yeah. Guess what? He goes inside somewhere else for a bunch of money. The Patriots get a third-round pick. They get a compensatory pick. They just lost one because of the ruling that came down with filming the Bengals sideline. Well, they get that pick back in a year. They lost it for 2021. They get it back if Cam leaves and signs for another team because he was successful. It's win-win for the Patriots, And it's win-win for Cam. If he's not healthy and he gets cut, he gets a little bit of money. If he's successful, he gets $7 million, and then he gets to sign another deal with another team. Because you know if he's successful and he's going to sign for big money, it's not going to be with the Patriots.
No, because they're not going to pay a quarterback that.
Absolutely, especially a 30-year-old quarterback who has injury problems.
Are you suggesting that Bill Belichick is so smart that he was stockpiling draft assets heading into this last draft in April or May, whenever it was? He was doing that because he knew he would be docked a draft pick for videotaping.
Listen, are you
saying that Belichick is so far ahead of the game that he knew
a little extra something in your pocket just in case?
If he shines up Cam Newton and he goes elsewhere, he'll get that pick back?
Just in case. What does Yurko say? He always keeps a couple extra hundreds on him just in case a card game breaks out.
Sure.
This is what Belichick is doing. He keeps a couple extra draft picks around just in case they get fined for something.
So Belichick planning ahead. Not something we've seen from our GM here in Chicago. So let me ask you this question at 312-332-3776. It's simple. Did the Bears make the right quarterback move in this offseason? The Bears traded a pick away while trading for Nick Foles. Nick Foles is going to be the quarterback that's going to compete with Mitchell Trubisky here in Chicago. Cam Newton's going to compete with Jared Stidham for New England's starting quarterback position. Nick Foles and Mitchell Trubisky will battle it out here in Chicago. Did the Bears make the right move going with Foles? I understand there's familiarity with the offensive systems. All of the coaches that are now working in the offensive room for the Chicago Bears have had run-ins with Nick Foles in the past in Philadelphia, in Kansas City, all over the place. So I get it. He understands the playbook. The one thing I continue to think about when I hear that is, like, how difficult is it to learn a playbook? Like, it's tough for you and I, but Cam Newton, like Cam Newton's a smart guy. You're telling me Cam Newton couldn't figure out a playbook in a season? Like, clearly the Patriots trust he can figure it out.
Well, I mean, look, he's also Cam Newton's also, and as Christopher points out on Twitter, not you, obviously, because you were just talking, you know, talking.
Yeah, but I go more
time.
As Chris. I'm not really Christopher.
Yeah, this Christopher. Is a Christopher Streicher. I'm going to butcher your last name. Streicher. I'm sorry, dude.
Like, let's be real. Cap's, like, the only person that calls me Christopher. Which is weird to me.
Christopher Joseph Bleck.
Well, and that's not my middle name at all, no.
What's your middle name?
Patrick.
I never put that together, that your middle name is your dad's name.
Well, there it is. You learned something today.
Oh, I never realized that till today. That's
way to
right.
go, best I've, man in my wedding.
I've just always called you Christopher Joseph Bleck. I knew your middle name
way to
was
go,
Patrick.
Friend from high school?
No, I know your middle name is Patrick, but I just realized that that's your dad's name too. Anyway, Christopher on Twitter says, wait, Adam Abdallah, at Adam A. Abdallah, follow me on Twitter, at Adam A. Abdallah. That's not what his tweet says, but he says, wait, at Adam A. Abdallah.
Yeah.
If they're confident with Jared Stidham, the wrong there, but that's okay, then why did they sign Cam Newton? Maybe I'm missing something here. They signed Cam Newton because it didn't cost him anything. They signed Cam Newton because the reason everybody was like, Cam Newton's not going to sign for the league minimum. How many times this offseason have we heard that Cam Newton wouldn't sign for the league minimum? Well, guess what? He did. He signed for the league minimum with a bunch of incentive-laden contract. Full of incentives that if he hits, he can make up to $7 million. So he found a team, or a team found him being willing to sign a league minimum. And they said, okay, sign it. Because worst thing that happens for us is whatever. We cut you and that's it. We sign. We give you a couple $100,000. You go on your way.
I don't think the worst case scenario is going to take place, though. I think Cam Newton's going to play well.
Okay. And worst case scenario, worst case scenario for the quarterback room or for Christopher, for whoever it is, he plays well. He's the starter. Your backup's Jared Stidham, and he knows your offense. So if and when Cam Newton gets hurt because he's been so injury prone the last few years, he didn't even play last year, all that good stuff, guess what? You've got a guy who knows your system as your backup.
You know, the Bears
win-win
had options with many different names. It wasn't just Cam Newton. You land on Nick Foles. Was that the right decision? 312-332-3776. Your call's next.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports. Home for sports. ESPN 1000.
This is Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000.
We'll be right back. football with you at 312-332-3776. David in Homewood, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up, David?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Talking football, what do you think about Cam Newton heading to the Patriots?
I literally was thinking to ask you guys your opinion, like, as soon as I heard this breaking news. And, like, one thing I wanted to elaborate on is I remember specifically Ryan Pace said that if he had the opportunity, he would draft the quarterback every year. So, with, like, what's going on right now with all of these proven veterans signing for minimum contracts, like, is there some sort of issue as far as, like, okay, well, if we're signing two veteran quarterbacks that's proven their tenure in the NFL, how come they don't just come duke it out? And who would you guys, like, prefer as far as a starting quarterback, Nick Foles or Cam Newton?
That's a good question, David. You know, I think on first reaction, Abdallah, my answer would be you'd have to go with Cam Newton because of the price tag. And you didn't give up any draft picks for him. For Nick Foles, not only is he more expensive, but you're giving up a fourth-round draft pick next season. You know, I
like your question before we went to commercial. You said, "Are you happy that Nick Foles is the guy or whatever it was?" The point is, I think that I like the idea of, like, if I had to pick, right? We're in a pandemic. We're in, you know, we don't know if there's going to be training camp. There's supposed to be training camp. There's going to be, they've been doing Zoom meetings. They haven't actually had a quarterback competition. There might not be as many preseason games this year because they have to move stuff back. Who knows when they're going to start the season? All the stuff that you put the little asterisks by and all that good stuff, right? Because of that, I think that Nick Foles is the better option because you know he's healthy. Yes, he's had problems staying healthy, but you know right now he's healthy. You don't know if Cam Newton's healthy. We don't know.
Medicals have checked out.
Have they?
Two different reports in the Patriots say that he's healthy.
Okay, then he's healthy.
Who's the better player?
I don't know. I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? You know who the better player is.
I don't know.
Better player.
Right now?
Better listen, football
dude,
player.
He won that MVP like 6 years ago.
Okay, but still.
He hasn't been the same player.
What has Nick Foles done?
Won a Super Bowl MVP. He can throw the ball.
Please.
I don't know what Cam Newton can do because one of his best assets is his legs, and those assets may have been taken away from him because he might not be able to play the same way.
Didn't he have a shoulder injury?
Okay, can he throw?
Okay, so that wouldn't change anything
but
with his legs.
If you're running and you're going to go and you're going to slide and you're going
to
get hit.
He needs to protect his body. I understand.
That's my point. I'm not saying that he doesn't have legs anymore.
I'm just saying, like, you can't say, how are the legs when he has shoulder injury? Like, that,
I'm
you got to connect it all.
For the system.
Who's a better quarterback?
For Matt Nagy.
One game.
It's what do you mean? It's all
one game.
There are variable factors. There are varying factors here.
Okay, here. One game. Winner take all.
Okay.
Nice weather.
Who's coaching?
No, you can't do that.
No, yes, I can.
No coaches.
You're giving me weather. Maybe I want rain.
No coaches.
Maybe I want snow.
Backyard football.
Okay. What do you mean no coaches?
No, because then you're going to do this whole thing. He's got
backyard.
Belichick, and
we
of course,
no,
you're
going to
take
play,
Belichick.
No,
and,
we don't play backyard football. I'm saying we play in the NFL. I'm saying that's how we would one game for the Chicago Bears, because that's what you asked. You asked if the Chicago Bears, if you're happy that the Chicago Bears got Nick Foles over Cam Newton. And I think I am, except for the price, because of
the price is a problem. And
yes,
giving up the draft pick, that's a problem.
But in a vacuum, Nick Foles is probably a better fit than Cam Newton.
But the vacuum for Ryan Pace, he's consistently always giving up more.
I understand that.
In all of these moves.
But you asked if I'm happy that Nick Foles is a Bear rather than Cam Newton in a vacuum for this season. Yes.
Because he knows more
about the system, and he can step right in and start. Cam's going to be on a learning curve regardless because he's just coming in.
Yeah, I mean.
What do you mean, yeah, I mean?
People act like quarterbacks can't learn new systems.
I'm not saying.
Can quarterbacks not learn new systems?
There's going to be a bit of a.
I feel like it's a major. It's a.
Who do you think has a better handle of the Patriots system right now? Jared Stidham or Cam Newton?
Probably Jared Stidham.
Okay. Who do you think's got a better handle of the Bears system right now? Nick Foles or Cam Newton? answer my question.
Ask the question that you're going to
ask. Answer my question.
You were going to ask a different question, but you knew it wouldn't work out in your favor.
Answer my question. Answer my question.
Probably Nick Foles.
Who has a better handle of the Bears offense right now, Nick Foles or Mitch Trubisky?
Exactly. Let's go to Dan in Frankfurt. You're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Dan?
Hey, guys. I love your show.
Thanks,
man. I really do. If this is the future of ESPN Chicago, I'm excited about it. I do want to point this out. It's not just who's a better quarterback, but let's put it this way. Let's just say Foles does wind up being great, and Cam does tank. Now, what happens to the teams, both teams, 2 or 3 years from now? Now, the Bears still need to find out the quarterback because there's a clause that Foles can leave. Now, Pace, I don't know about you guys. You guys are both on the radio fairly new, and my position, I'm in the utility business, 5 years new. I try and learn from the best. I don't try and learn from that kid that just got that job and calling off every Friday or Monday morning. You know what I mean? And Pace is doing nothing that Belichick is doing. Not anything close to it. I mean, I don't understand why it's so hard for a general manager that's new in the position to at least take some things that Belichick is proving that works in the system and apply it to their profession. That just baffles me. Now, I want to hang up and hear what you have to think about the fact that what if Foles were to be really good and Cam Newton were to flop and how the teams wind up being years after. Now, thank you very much, guys. Have a great night.
You too, Dan. Thanks for the phone call. Okay, so if Foles is really good, one, that's fantastic for the Bears. And let me add this. If Trubisky rolls out and is the quarterback this season and is really good, guess what? Also really good for the Chicago Bears. I would be in on both of those items. Good quarterback play from either guy. Let's do that. And the future of the team would be great because now you've solved the quarterback position. If Nick Foles has figured it out in this system and he's worth paying at some point to extend in a quarterback situation, I'm okay with that. Now, if Cam Newton doesn't work out for the Patriots, it's an easy fix, right? Because they're probably not going to be that good unless Jared Stidham surprises the world.
Nope.
But so, okay.
I mean, he might.
You're going to be drafting a quarterback next year in the first round, maybe. You won't have Cam Newton there. For the Patriots to fix a bad Cam Newton is much easier than the Chicago Bears fixing this quarterback situation if Nagy and Foles and Trubisky can't get on the same page. Whoever it is, I don't care who the star is. Whoever that star is, if they can't play well this year, it's a much tougher situation for the Bears going forward.
That's one of my biggest questions heading into this year is how good is good? Like, what's our level of good for Nick Foles? What is the barometer to keep him around next year? What's the barometer for him to opt out and go find work elsewhere? What is that barometer? Because, you know, some reports have said he wants to stay with all of these coaches. So if all of these coaches come back, he might not opt out, or he might opt out and sign a restructured deal or whatever. But by all accounts, he wants to be around these guys that he's familiar with and that are familiar with him. So what's the threshold? Like, how good does Nick Foles have to be good? Because remember, we saw it with, we quote, the truthers won't let you forget it. I don't know if you know this, Chris. I don't know if you know this. I don't know if you know this, Eric, producing the show tonight. I don't know if you guys know this, but Trubisky once took the Bears to a 12-win season and they went to the playoffs. I don't know if you guys know this. I've only just begun to read about this phenomenon.
I think you're wrong about this. I think you need to correct that to he led the Bears to a 12-4 season. That's what the Trubisky truthers would like you to believe.
Yeah, okay.
He led the Bears to a 12-4 season.
He was lucky to be in the back of the car for that one.
I'm just letting you know what they have been telling me online, that the Trubisky truthers want you to know.
Like, if the Bears
come out, he led the Chicago Bears and the NFL to a 12-4 season.
If the Bears come out and this defense is the number one defense again, like they were a couple years ago, and they win 13 games, and they go to the playoffs, and they win a round, but he looks like Rex Grossman and Kyle Orton out there, like, what, is that okay? Like, what is, do you know what I mean? Like,
who's doing that? Who is it? Is it Foles or Trubisky?
Foles. Trubisky. Because
if it's Trubisky, then celebrate. Because finally, we have a quarterback. The truthers, unite. Did you hear that? I know we have to break.
Yes.
We're going to talk baseball in a minute. Do you know that we have a supporter? You and I have a supporter. Did you hear this earlier today?
I'm not wearing a supporter.
You know, the kids are on our side, Abdallah.
The kids?
Because even though the Trubisky truthers are out there and they're just coming at us with nonsense, mm-hmm. even though we have stats and eyeballs,
mm-hmm.
Did you hear this call earlier today on Cap and Company?
Jackson, he's up first. Hey, Jackson, what's up?
Hey, Cap. Hope you're doing good. I just want to talk about Ryan Pace making dumb decisions. It's just enough. I just had enough of this. He didn't take Mahomes or Deshaun Watson.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I think if he doesn't succeed this year, I think he might get fired.
Young! Yeah. Young! Yes, yeah. Jackson!
Did Cap hang up on a kid today?
Jackson, he's up first.
Did he hang up on a kid?
Coming in hot.
Hope you're doing good. I just want to talk about
compliment first.
Ryan Pace making dumb decisions.
Dumb decisions.
I just had enough of this.
He said enough.
Didn't take Mahomes or Deshaun Watson.
Mm-mm.
And, like, I think if he doesn't succeed this year, I think he might get fired.
He's 7 years old and he's seen enough in his lifetime as a Bears fan.
That might be a kid I don't know I have.
Wait, you think that's your kid?
No, I don't have any kids.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
I'd like you to meet someone who's really special.
It's Black and Abdallah.
A real inspiration.
Follow us on the gram at Black and Abdallah and at ESPN _ Chicago.
All right, so we're under a month till the baseball season begins.
Woo.
We have the rosters.
Yeah.
David Ross spoke today. Lucas Giolito was on the station talking to Waddle and Sylvie. Meller sitting
in. He's up to three innings an outing.
How about that?
How about that?
So baseball is cooking, and so 60 games,
summer
right?
Summer camp.
And that's what they're calling it.
Yeah. They got a sponsor, too.
Oh,
of course they do.
See, then they're...
Of course the MLB has a sponsor for it.
That's the key to success.
Money, there's no money.
If you can get a sponsor, you can do things in life. So, all right, 60 games. When I look back at previous baseball seasons, that puts you right around June 1st. And I think it's very interesting to look at this season because can teams kind of figure out who they are in 60 games? Will the best teams be the best teams when we get to the playoffs? Or will it be fluky? Will we see a rando team show up in the playoffs this year? That, to me, it's very fascinating as we head into the 60-game schedule for the baseball season.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that, you know, I think we've got two teams here in town that are somewhat opposites of each other. I wouldn't say polar opposites of each other, but somewhat. You've got a lot of veterans on the Cubs, and you've got a lot of younger guys on the White Sox. And seeing how each team will address this 60-game sprint, as they're calling it, because it's not 162. It's the sprint part. We're through the dog days.
Yes,
it's
right.
It's literally just the, this is when people start to care now.
No dogs, only ball.
That's what we're looking at this summer.
Yeah. Let's talk to one of our favorite baseball guests, Sarah Langs from the MLB Network. You can follow her on Twitter at S Langs on Sports. Sarah, it's good to talk to you. And if we look at this 60 game season for Major League Baseball, what do you think stands out from years past when we look at teams, when we get to around June 1st, who are those teams that are usually at the top of the standings?
Hey, so thank you guys so much for having me. It's great to be talking baseball again. It's great to be, you know, ramping up here and looking forward to all this. So, you know, it's funny because I think when people ask that question and when people think about, okay, is 60 games really enough to see what a team is made of? We have a really recent example of a team that was not where they were at 60 games compared to where they were at the end of the season with the Nationals, of course, the 19-31, that start, all of that. But if you actually look back in the wild card era, 68% of teams that made the playoffs were in that playoff spot through 60 games. So we're not talking 100%, we're not talking 90%, but 68% of teams is a pretty hefty sample there. And it's certainly not, you know, that it's completely haywire. It's only 50% or whatever else like that. And if you just look back at, you know, last season, the division winners were all at least having a share of their division lead. Through 60 games, the Yankees, Twins, and Astros, the Braves, Brewers, and Dodgers. The Braves and Brewers were in ties through 60 games, but ultimately went on to win that. But it also tells you that with what we saw last year, you know, the Phillies were in a playoff spot through 60 games, did not make the playoffs. The Cubs were in a playoff spot through 60 games, excuse me. So it's a little bit of a mixed bag, but I think that it's really recency bias that makes us wonder whether it's enough.
Yes, you know? Sarah, because, you know, when we think back to it, it seems like as we head towards the trade deadline, a traditional trade deadline and the All-Star break, like there's this lie in baseball where teams believe they're in it, even though they're not. And people in the fan bases always look at it as like, yeah, we still have time. We can still get it done. And I always look back to it and say, like, you know, the teams who are in first place usually are in first place for the majority of the summer. It's rare that a team can come out of nowhere and then steal a playoff spot late.
Exactly. I mean, and again, you know, the Nationals were such an aberration, but for the most part, we're used to seeing teams come out. And pretty early on, I mean, even through a month or 2 months, which is basically what we're dealing with here with essentially 2 months, you know, we pretty much know where they're at. And it usually would take a really franchise changing type of acquisition to change something like that. I mean, my default is thinking of, you know, when the Mets got Yoenis Cespedes down the stretch in 2015, they got him at the trade deadline. His first game was July 31st, whatever it was. And then they went on that march. They weren't quite exactly there at the time when they got him, but they were already on their way. So it's not like it's, you know, night and day and all of a sudden you're significantly better. And you know what? Ultimately, 60 games is what we've got. It's going to be great. There may be some teams where we never know. You know, if a team ends the season on a 10-game winning streak and doesn't make the playoffs, of course we're always going to wonder about it. But that kind of thing can happen in 162 games, too. It's a little less likely, but it still could happen, you know?
Who are some of the players that are going to take advantage of this 60-game stretch and that usually get off to a hot start? That hot start could just be their season at this point. Who are some of those guys that you'll look at that could be the statistical leaders this season if we're not going to get some of the traditional guys that usually lead the league in stats?
Yeah, I mean, the first guy who I think of when you say that is Bryce Harper. He's a notorious fast starter. We saw it with the Phillies last year. I mean, the Phillies are one of the teams that was in a playoff spot through 60 games and did not make the playoffs, and he was a big part of that. They were leading that division. They were tied for it through 60 games, and it was that awesome torrid start that he got off to with the Phillies, all of those home runs he was hitting and everything he was doing. So I think that, you know, he's one of the guys who I really think of right off the bat. But, you know, I don't think any of these, I mean, these are great players. I really can't even think of someone off the top of my head who is a slow starter. There are certainly some guys who might stand out like Harper, but ultimately, you know, they're going to be who they are.
Sarah Langs from the MLB Network talking baseball with Chris Black and Adam Abdallah here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. When we look at the Chicago Cubs and the Chicago White Sox, two different teams in two different spots, the Cubs still trying to hold on to that playoff caliber we've seen from the last couple of years, even though they missed the playoffs last year. And the White Sox, a group of young players trying to get there for the first time. In a 60-game schedule, what do you think, which team has benefited the most from the shorter season?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a fascinating question because I think in a way they're both going to benefit a ton. It's just that how we weigh that beneficial nature is completely different. I mean, for the Cubs, I do think that window is really closing. I think we even talked about this last season, but I think that the Brewers are going to struggle is my expectation. I think the Cardinals are going to struggle. So maybe just playing 60 games will help the Cubs because if they get off to that hot start, they'll find themselves in the playoffs regardless of the team that they are overall. So I think that that's certainly a benefit for them. I don't anticipate them starting slow unless they're just not going to be great. But I think the White Sox are going to benefit from this a lot, too, because we're going to get looks at those young players. We're going to see, I mean, I would assume we're going to see Michael Kopech in the majors at some point, which did not seem like a thing when he made his spring debut back in March. But he is on the player pool, so I'm anticipating at the very least he's going to be soaking up knowledge from veterans in the alternate spring training site or whatever else it is. And I think that for a young team like that, they're going to learn a lot about themselves and they're really going to get valuable, valuable experience. So I think they're going to benefit from that a ton too. I just think that the way we have to measure it is completely different. I don't think, you know, I was one of the people who in January was telling everyone that I think the White Sox could make the playoffs. I really think maybe they could be one of those wild cards if everything went right. I'm a little less on that train now, but I don't think that's necessarily the barometer of success this year.
As far as pitching goes, we had Lucas Giolito was on the station earlier today. He talked about how he's working in three innings a day, basically, when he goes out and does work. He's getting up and getting up, sitting down and doing that for about three innings worth of work. And other guys on the, you know, the Cubs like Yu Darvish and John Lester, he's got two more years left on his deal. That might be the end of his career, at least with the Cubs, if not just his career in general. What do you think those guys will look like? Are they going to look to go just 3-4 innings until about a month into the season? Or do you kind of expect these guys to be ramped up and be ready to go 6 or 7 innings once we start here in a month?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a really interesting question. I think, you know, it may end up falling a little bit along the lines of what I was talking about between, you know, just those differences between the Cubs and the White Sox. I think the Cubs might benefit more from 5 to 7 innings from Yu Darvish if he can go out and do that, if he feels physically ready for that, if they're in a pennant chase basically starting on July 23rd or 24th. Whereas the White Sox, I think, can afford to be a little more cautious with a guy like Giolito coming off such a great season, but a huge body of work, you know, make sure that there is no injury, there are no lingering effects of just how many innings he threw, and sort of manage him for the next few years of his career and use this season to do that. I don't know exactly how teams are going to choose to approach it, but I'm sort of expecting that the teams we anticipate being contenders, the Yankees, the Dodgers, the Cubs, all of these teams are going to be using those aces pretty much the way they would normally. I mean, even in a normal season, certainly at the beginning of the year, there are some extra off days. You might have a 4-man rotation, not have to introduce a 5th starter, but ultimately you're still expecting your ace to go deep into the game. So I think that will happen, but I could certainly see on some of these more rebuilding teams that it might make more sense to be going in 3-4 inning type starts.
Is there a team that you look at and you say they may surprise people in this short season?
Yeah, I mean, I love when people talk about, like, you never know, you know, the Tigers could throw out Casey Mize and, you know, all of this could happen. I don't think those kinds of things are going to happen, but I do wonder about these teams that are a little bit more on the fringes. I mean, a team like the Reds, a team like the Mets, who are certainly better than the Reds, but these ones who nobody's necessarily projecting to win their divisions, whether they could, I mean, if you have one really good month, right, like a 30-game hot streak, you could end up in that wild card sort of conversation. So I'm not sure. I feel like right now, as I said before, I feel a little lower on the, like, sort of surprise teams that I was picking back in January before any of this, like the White Sox, which who I really want to be on board with and I'm really excited for next year for them. But, you know, I guess that's why they play the game, and we'll see.
Thank you, Sarah. We appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
That's Sarah Langs from the MLB Network. Follow her on Twitter, S. Langs on Sports, one of our favorite baseball guests. And, you know, the stat you gave at the start, 68% of teams were in first place at June 1st. When you got to that point in previous seasons, you know, like, okay, 60 games, it's going to be a sprint. But usually in baseball, the good teams are good early. And I think she nailed it with the White Sox. I love that team if it was a full season. But unfortunately, 60 games, so much has to go right so quickly for these young players who have not really come together as a group before and played meaningful baseball games. I know at the end of last summer, there were some exciting games on the South Side where you saw the flashes of talent, but I really lean towards the Cubs as the team that's going to be more successful in this strange baseball season.
I think, you know, that the hitting is going to be there for the White Sox. You know, they've got a lot of guys that can hit. It's going to be hot already. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to wait for these guys to ramp up in the cold Chicago spring or whatever. Like, we're already hitting 90 every day, basically, and it's going to be humid. That ball is going to be flying out of there. It's the pitching. It's what are these guys going to look like? How long can Giolito go into games? What's Kopech going to be able to give you at all?
If Kopech shows up and he's throwing 100 miles per hour,
yeah,
giving you 6+.
Exactly. So I feel like it's all
legit.
If the pitching is there, the White Sox might be able to do something. But like Sarah said, it's really, and I think they're still in that mindset, because even Rick Hahn has said this, they're not going to deviate from their plan. They may be one player away, but they're still not going to deviate from their plan because they're looking at this from a long-term success, and that still looks like it's the 2021 season and not the shortened 60-game season that we're going to get.
So nice to talk about baseball on the field.
Just talking ball in general.
How about that? Just talking baseball. Bats, balls, bunting, running. The whole thing.
Everything.
Hit and runs, steals, signs.
Yeah. Shifts.
So nice.
Shifts.
Walks. Yeah, I've even missed some walks.
Three-batter minimum.
Yeah.
Universal DH.
It's nice.
Towel me off.
Oh, no. Now Buster only saying that we might not even have a baseball season.
What? What about this? Wait. We just did a whole segment.
I know. We'll hear from it next.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
This is Leckie and Abdallah on ESPN 1000.
Just talked to Sarah Langs from MLB.com. This is why she's the best, Abdallah, because she messaged us after the radio hit. So if you missed the interview, check it out on the podcast, Bleck and Abdallah, on the ESPN Chicago app. You can find all of our podcasts there. That's where you'll find the interview from this last 10 minutes and from this hour. She messaged us this, a Darvish stat. You Darvish stat, because we didn't get to it, right? This is what she says. Yu Darvish had 7 walks from July 12th to the end of last season. That was the fewest among 95 pitchers to throw at least 60 innings in that span. 7 walks! He's going to be huge for the Cubs this year. Hopefully he'll carry that momentum. So she wanted to get that stat in there. We didn't have time. She's the best. She followed up, gave us the stat anyway. Yu Darvish for the Chicago Cubs will be huge in this season. 7 walks? That's insane.
He was on a crazy tear towards the end of the season.
Absolutely.
And I don't know if it's going to take him, like, if it would take him to July to get there, you know. But now that, I think that everybody, every baseball player will tell you they perform better in the middle of the summer when it's hotter out. You know, no one wants to play in the cold.
I would imagine it also has something to do with all of these games are going to matter.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's different at
the end of July when it's just nonsense,
right? Okay, so we just had a fantastic time talking baseball.
Talking actual ball games
on the field.
Love and life.
I heard this on Saturday on Dari Amel. I couldn't believe what I heard, because it seems like we've gotten to a point with all the professional sports in this country. We don't really have a plan for football at the moment, but with hockey and basketball and baseball, we've been told a plan to get through this COVID-19 pandemic. We know what's going to take place. Baseball starting within a month, right? That's what we've been told. Here's Buster Olney on Saturday on Dari Amel on ESPN Radio.
How confident are you that this season gets finished?
0%. Absolutely 0% based on what I'm hearing.
How confident are you that this season gets started with actual games?
I would put that at 5%. I think that they're going to at least try in the next couple weeks, but I... especially in the face of these spiking numbers, it wouldn't surprise me if it derails quickly.
So I heard that, right?
The heck, man?
Let me ask you this question.
What the heck, man?
Did baseball all along not really want to play this summer?
No, absolutely not. Are you kidding me? They want that playoff money.
The players do, yeah.
The owners want that playoff money.
But some of the owners didn't want to play.
Well, those owners are dumb.
They waited so long to implement anything. So long.
How confident are you that this season gets finished?
0%. Absolutely 0% based on what I'm hearing.
How confident are you that this season gets started with actual games?
I would put that at 5%. I think that they're going to at least try in the next couple weeks, but I, especially in the face of these spiking numbers, it wouldn't surprise me if it derails quickly.
When I heard that, I was shocked. And I know that's not Dari or Mel. I think it's Randy Scott, Sports Center anchor. But asking the question.
So Buster Olney.
But Buster Olney saying he thinks
pooping
there's
on our
0%
baseball party.
Chance that they finish the baseball season?
You pooping on our baseball party, Buster.
I mean, are you kidding me?
It's ridiculous.
And then he said this. How does baseball, they're mishandling the return of baseball. How are they mishandling the return of baseball? Here's Buster.
In the face of these positive tests that are popping up, which, by the way, essentially are happening in the most important states for baseball, Florida, Texas, Arizona, California, where so many players are from, a lot of baseball officials really have serious questions about whether or not they'll be able to lock that down. And as these individual teams are trying to carry out the specifics of the safety and the health and safety protocol, they're running into major complications when it comes to traveling players, getting them on planes, because in certain areas you've got quarantines, in other areas you don't. It's a giant maze. And let's face it, given the spike in the coronavirus, this is like looking at the weather forecast, seeing that a tropical storm is coming in, and saying, you know what, I'm going to go out on the water right now.
I mean,
let's go fishing.
I was looking forward to previewing games.
The seas are angry, my friend.
I was getting ready for baseball.
Let's go for
I thought we could preview swim. Baseball games.
We can.
Are we really not going to have a baseball
season?
No, listen,
we are going to preview until
so
they
let me
say,
ask you this. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this then. If they were planning on playing all along, where's my schedule?
Just why do you need everything at once?
When are they
starting
off?
They're not going to play for a month. They could give you a schedule the day before. What difference does it make?
I like the plan.
They're playing ball.
I'd like to see what games are on the schedule.
What difference does it make?
I want to know when the Cubs and the White Sox are going to play.
Ugh.
Crosstown Classic. Take that. Don't you want to know?
No.
Yeah, you do. You like a good forced rivalry when you can have one, and let's take it this summer.
Tell me, I want to know when a real rivalry is taking place. Tell me when the Cubs and Brewers are playing.
Yeah, those games will be on the schedule. Some Twins White Sox, I want to see that. Where's the schedule? Are they delaying that? What's going on here?
Tell me when the Cubs are playing, I don't know, like, I'm trying to think of who's in their division that they would play that's in a hot spot.
Cubs?
Yeah, or White Sox.
I mean, neither, because... The hot spots are in the South right now.
All right, then the Cubs. Then we just get the Central Division Baseball. That's it.
Oh, so are you suggesting Major League Baseball could kind of go rogue like college football will go this year? And they'll just play the Central Divisions, will have their season, and they'll be back?
No, it's either all or nothing, because if only some of them play, there are way too many butts to be hurt.
What do you mean?
They'll have hurt butts.
Why?
Because some of them are like, what do you mean, where's our money? Why can't we play games?
Coming up next.
Please shut down bars again. Where's our games?
Why are we still hearing that Jim Boylan may be back as the Bulls head coach?
You want to talk about her butts.
Why is this still a thing? Next. 2 minutes.
You are listening to Black and Abdallah.
ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.